dear influential leaders, movers and shakers, welcome to a new episode of the Influential Executive Podcast. Every week we bring a new episode in which we interview world-class influencers who are very successful because they chose to be a leader in their field and do what others can't do, won't do, or don't know how to do. You know that nothing is impossible once you set your mind to it and surround yourself with the right people.
Today's interview will be big for all your listeners who value self-reflection and personal development as much as we do. Especially when you're an entrepreneur, your business grows how you grow as a person. How you lead others is a reflection of how you lead yourself. As a business owner, you're the captain of your ship. And that means that more than anything else, the quality of your decisions defines how well your business performs. Today's guest, Scott Jeffrey, is an absolute world-class expert in the field of self-development. He shows you how to use your mind and body for optimal results. In other words, how to be the CEO of your own life. Scott is the founder of CEO Sage and business coach for entrepreneurs looking to grow internally as they scale their business. With an important side note, without burning out. Every month, 100,000 people read his transformational guides, and today he shares his best strategies on how to increase your influence and your performance.
You know that we have a huge passion for personal development, so we were very excited about this interview. We too spent more than a decade studying topics like psychology and time management, communication, business, physics and leadership, and this was our chance to get another perspective on this powerful information. Some people may wonder what personal development has to do with business. Well, every business is essentially a group of people. With our coaching and consulting business, Earn More, Work Less, we apply this knowledge of psychology and human behavior in business. And we make these complex theories easy to understand. We break them down into simple yet very powerful strategies to scale your business, increase your influence, and improve your team's performance. So welcome to the number one podcast for growth-minded leaders who want to grow their influence. For all leaders who have open mind and want to learn from the best.
Have you checked out our Facebook page? In less than 2 months, we got over 10,000 real fans and followers on our page. So how did we accomplish this? We partnered up with the right experts. In business, there's typically one thing you're great at, and for everything else, you need to collect the right people around you. For this reason, we partnered up with the amazing social media experts from Black Paul Marketing. They're outstanding in finding high quality leads so that we invest in our marketing as effectively as possible. At the end of this podcast, we will share with you how you too can stop wasting money on Facebook ads and work with Black Paul to do it right the first time.
Now, get ready to enjoy a value-packed episode. We speak about the value of having a strong vision, about self-reflection and how to recognize when you are sabotaging yourself, about why leaders grow much faster with a coach by their side and which daily routines help you be the best leader you can be. We even touch upon the two most fundamental questions in life. Who am I and what do I really want? Get ready for a fresh perspective on life, business, and yourself with Scott Jeffrey.
Scott, welcome in the Influential Executive Podcast. Great that you could join us.
Thank you for being here. It's my pleasure.
Before I start asking you all kinds of questions that we have lined up for you, let me give a short introduction for the listeners. Scott is the writer of one of the few blogs that I've been following for years.
That's right.
I've been following hundreds of newsletters and only some of them have survived throughout the years. So Scott, you are in the company of Seth Godin and Derek Halpern and Tony Robbins.
I'm honored, thank you.
So Scott is the founder of CEO Sage and business coach for entrepreneurs looking to grow internally as they scale their business without burning out. And in today's podcast, we're looking to learn how to unlock our genius, because that's what you do. You unlock your genius. What does that mean?
Well, it's based on this idea that you have that genius already inside, right? That you're not actually building something new. So much of personal development is about growing towards something. But ultimately, you get to a point where it's more about stripping away all the things that you're not, and then finding your genius that was there all along.
Wow, that's amazing. And we have some questions also about how you have experienced that shift or that process. How I know you from your newsletters is that you are the man of the strategies, the tools, the theories, the principles, and you keep surprising me with your newsletters by always bringing on new perspectives on this personal growth matter. And on CEO Sage, you share many of the secrets that you use with your clients to help them slay their dragons, to cultivate wealth and become CEO of their life. What does it mean to be CEO of your life?
Well, I would say that most of us are in a position where we're putting the authority outside of ourselves, right? The CEO is the one who's that chief, right? And so we're all looking for other chiefs to kind of tell us how to be, how to live. I mean, we oftentimes do it in the form of, okay, what's the latest hack or something like that. But ultimately, we're looking for someone to tell us how to be better than we already are, right? And so the CEO of your life is kind of shifting it around. It's like, how do you stop putting your attention on what other people are doing and recapture that authority within yourself, that inner sovereign, that inner sort of king that already has all those answers that are just waiting to be heard? But early on in childhood, we don't get to a point where we develop that. We have it early on, and then it's quickly conditioned out of ourselves with the school system and with projecting onto celebrities or what we think is the good life. Mm-hmm. And then you get to a point where you're just like, well, what do I actually want? Who am I? Right? It's kind of very simple, deeply rooted questions. And if you come to a point where it's like, it's not so easy to know because you've been listening to other people for so long that you only know what you've been told. And so again, stripping away what you've been told to find what's at the core inside of you all along. And that's, I think at that point, you reach that point of integration where that CEO of your life becomes closer to a living reality.
It seems like you have captured all the patterns that define how a lifetime goes there in just a couple of sentences. So I can imagine that when you coach with clients one-on-one, that you can achieve quite a lot in one coaching session.
Oftentimes, it all depends on the level of resistance that we have. And we all have a lot of points of resistance. So getting to know what those points of resistance are, sometimes it's like there's an old story of like in some Taoist book where like a king was walking by, he heard an enlightened man say, activate the mind without dwelling on anything. And all he had to hear is hear that one moment, and he was enlightened in that one moment, you know. But that person was ready to hear it, right? He was receptive, he heard it and took it in. Other times, I mean, I know I could be very thick-headed. I have to read a book 6 times before I get what the author's talking about. So, and it's not because I don't understand it. It's just because there's a part that really just doesn't want to take it in. It doesn't want to accept that information. And it doesn't want to, like, lose control, essentially, which is what happens when you know, let something else in and let go of the old and allow what was already there to come forth.
You speak about being your true self or knowing who am I. So who are you, Scott? And which kind of programming did you have to get rid of?
Oh, the only reason why I could speak intelligently about all this stuff is because I went into all of them. I mean, I started on this journey over 20 years ago with, you mentioned Tony Robbins, you know, and I went into his stuff so deeply that I started working with his platinum partners, the people in his inner circle, and they would call me like a young Tony because I had the language of Tony down so well because I listened to his audio programs over and over and over again. And so from you know, early 20s on, I went to every sort of system, and like we could spend our entire session going through all of them because My nature is just one that goes deeply into things. It doesn't like going cursory. If it likes a topic, it'll go like read first the top four books, and then it'll go to six books on the fringe. And if I get really into something, I'll go into the bibliography and read every book the author referenced. Yeah. So there was a lot of programming and then unprogramming. Yeah, that took place during the course of that time.
How many books did you read?
At last count, it was between 1,200 and 1,500 books. Yeah. I took every speed reading course there was, and for a while I was reading about four books a week, but I was also investing a great deal of time in reading. I probably spent 8 hours a day reading and writing for a number of years. So it was a primary focus of my time.
And what was for your time that you realized the importance of coaching or self-development? Because you started some time ago, but what was the trigger exactly?
Well, you know, there's this adage of those who don't know teach. What started to happen was I would get very deep into someone's work, and then I would learn more about them personally. And I was always disappointed, like every time. And the level of disillusionment, just one after the next, after the next. But still, it never occurred to me that everything I was writing and doing, that I was the exact same way, right? That's the nature of the shadow. It's like, it's very elusive. So it's easy to see it on other people, but then like, how does it relate to you? So the starting point was getting out of my head and spending more time in body-oriented work and integration, that I began to see like how full of shit I was. And then I started to appreciate like more of where I was, not my idea of myself, right? That self-identity that could be so grandiose and inflated or so low to the ground, right? But just where are you in the grand scheme? And then there's just like a little bit of humility that comes in where you start to go, okay, all right, I got a lot. I'm not anywhere close to where I thought I was. You know, you start to believe that because you write something, you know it, or that you are it, right? There's a distinction between knowledge and beingness, and knowledge tends to outpace beingness. But we don't realize that because we could speak intelligently about it. You just assume that you know. Just like when you hear someone speaking about something, you assume they know. But after a while, again, if you can look into their homes with a double-sided mirror and they didn't know you were looking, you would see a very different story, sadly.
Something that everybody knows is the importance of discipline. And what you just said reminded me of a coaching session we just had with one of her clients. And she said, I know what I should be doing, but I don't seem to succeed and I need more discipline. Where does it come from, according to you? And what would you recommend any listener who recognizes the same for him or herself?
Well, discipline's an interesting topic. It's a little bit loaded. You know, there's a lot of research showing about how like we're born with a certain level of discipline. You can do certain things to develop discipline in a particular area. But that discipline in one area comes at the expense of another area, right? Like the research shows like if you spend more time dieting, you're more likely to like cheat in another area, basically. There's utility, there's value in developing discipline, but ultimately it's what's better when it comes to behaviors that are disempowering, compulsive, addictive behaviors, to look at what's driving those behaviors. Because our conscious mind wants to force ourselves through discipline and will to not do a behavior that we know doesn't support us. But we're doing so without understanding the unconscious mechanisms that are leading us into that pattern in the first place. That's why the inner work is so important, because the inner work gets you more connected when you develop the emotional intelligence to know, okay, I'm feeling bad right now because I was just triggered by this person looking at me a certain way, but it's not my adult self that's getting triggered, it's a child, and that person represents my mother, and so because of that, I need to go eat a bag of chips or, you know, watch TV or whatever it is, you know. So that kind of, until you develop that awareness, those patterns keep running and you feel like you need more and more discipline. But the exclusive focus on discipline, honestly, will lead you to illness every time, because it's trying to force, like, you're creating more resistance. You're forcing something on your unconscious. And, you know, when you're young, you kind of believe that that's possible. But over time, you start to see that eventually the unconscious can kick your ass every time.
I love that you mentioned force here. What was a major game changer for me in my personal development is when I started to understand the difference between power and force. And David R. Hawkins wrote a book about that. I understood that that book also has a special meaning for you. So how do you describe the difference between power and force, and what does it mean for the way we make our decisions in daily life?
Well, the idea there, force would again be like, from the context of Hawkins, is like, it's coming from more of pushing, right? Like you're kind of exerting force against an object, right? Trying to push yourself forward to succeed, to achieve, to not do something you don't want to do. Whereas power is something more intrinsic within you, right? Now, to access that power, however, means going into the darkness, because what's driving those behaviors is some darker force that we don't know. And so you can't will yourself there. You can't decide to be there, right? You can't even pray to be there. There's no other way outside of cultivating the inner authority and then navigating back into the trenches and say, oh, okay, that's why that's happening. And then come out and say, okay, I see that. I can parent that part of me, and then you can have. Then you have choice. See, we think when we have like an addictive behavior, there's like a choice, but the choice is not really there until you're conscious of why that behavior is there in the first place.
Yeah. Love it.
I told you this guy was genius.
That's right, isn't it?
This is very important stuff, and it brings a new perspective to what we call the zoom in, zoom out habit. So one thing that we show all our clients to do is to have regular zoom out moments in their routine. Like every day, at the end of the day, you zoom out, you have a look over the week and the days, you reflect, you plan ahead. And so your better self, your powerful authority, has decided on what those days will look like. At the end of the week, you zoom out a bit further, at the end of the month, even further. And so you change perspectives on how to do the work in the trenches.
Excellent.
Scott, you speak a lot about being a CEO of your own life, so being a leader. So just what does influence mean to you?
Influence is really just about having trust. And so having other people trust you. You look at what we call an influencer. It's someone who has a following of people that trust what they say for whatever reason, whether that trust is founded or not. It's based on those people believe that this individual is someone that they trust, and so they trust their opinion, they trust what they say. That's really the foundation. And ultimately, if you look at leadership, it's the same. You know, the research on leadership shows the number one characteristic of whether someone will listen to the CEO, for example, is whether or not they think that they're honest, whether they trust them.
Right.
So that integrity, that honesty is the defining characteristic. Now, again, turning back to the shadow side, what, like, creating influence is really different than trust and integrity, right? Like, just so we separate those out, because there's plenty of people that have huge followings of people that trust them, but it doesn't mean that trust is grounded. They could be good marketers who are good at creating influence, which means the illusion of trust.
Yeah.
But whether that person is trustworthy or not, that's different. But can you create that feeling of trust and honesty? Then you can be someone of influence.
It all comes down to who are you, because that's what makes you unique. One thing I'm thinking of, how can I know that I am right now my true self, that I am the leader inside of me, I am the CEO?
You're not going to like this answer, but you're probably going to feel bad a lot of the time. because I say that because one of the reasons that's hard to know yourself is that we, in creating our self-image with our conscious mind, mm-hmm. we want it to be as great as it can be, right? We want it to be based on an image that other people will like, that will get approval for, right? The whole way the shadow is created is during childhood, there were certain ways we expressed ourselves that were not accepted. And they receive disapproval. And when you're dependent on someone else, it's very important to be accepted. So we push those down and sweep it under the rug. And we do that for the first 20 years of life. And then we forget that we swept that under there. And now we're just pretending we're, well, what Jung called the persona, which is like the social mask, or maybe a set versions of social masks, right? They look a certain way, they dress a certain way, they act a certain way. And those are our archetypes, right? And so we behave like them. And when we do, other people like it and they approve. They say, good, you're being a good archetype. Good, you're being a good archetype, right? And so we learn how to play those characters, but then forget that we're being those characters, right? The more you get to yourself, the more you start to see that you're not like those characters at all, which makes that ego part of us, right? The part that we say is I. It doesn't feel inflated anymore. It comes down. First, it has to come down, right? To feel the deflation that was always masking underneath it, right? Behind the superiority is the inferiority. And it's a game of going up and down, up and down, up and down. It's exhausting. But eventually, over time, you start to kind of come to some center, some middle, where you're just okay. You know, it's. I think the best way of describing it is it's like an okayness. Mm-hmm. Of the, like all those qualities that, like you look at like anything else that you would run away from, like, or that you don't like at someone else, right? The quickest way to do this, like make a list of all those things and then figure out how all of that is in you, every single one of those things, and swallow that pill, right? And then you're there.
Awesome.
Rinse and repeat over and over again.
I'm just thinking fast forward, right? We are a generation of millennials, yeah. Searching constantly for impact and meaning and purpose. And I do believe that many of us, we want to raise kids that kind of do not have this kind of programming. So what would be very generic advice to all of us who are already raising or about to raise a kid?
Sure. Well, I would say first, wait as long as you can. Because you're going to have the most opportunity to integrate a lot of these things. Because the reason why these cycles continue is because every generation dumps them on the next. So everything that you don't know, everything you're not a container for, whatever emotion you're running from, it's going to be very easy. You want to feel better about yourself? Just have kids. Put it on them. You're going to feel great. If not, just have a kid. Get a pet. People put all of their, you know, you can shame the crap out of your dog. And let it be really guilty, and you'll feel much better, right? So, again, all of this stuff is running because, as a quote from a postmodern philosopher, Heidegger, like, the devastation has already occurred, meaning, like, everything already happened in childhood. It's just a function of whether or not you know about it. Now, the challenge is that the best way to learn of this stuff is to be in a family environment. And because a lot of times you don't have those triggers until you're in that environment. But what you can do is develop enough self-awareness to catch patterns and behaviors where you're going, okay, why did I just do that? Or why am I hating right now? Because one thing I observe constantly in parents is that, like, for example, the modern mother, like, they are so repressed of the fact that they hate their kids. And that hatred towards their kids, which we could get into in terms of why that's there, keeps them from having any semblance of real, genuine feelings of love. And so instead, they act loving. They try to act it, right? But they don't actually feel love. And kids don't have the cognition to be able to interpret what's happening, but they feel everything, mm-hmm. right? And so they're taking that in. And then their idea of what love is very skewed. And you could see, again, this happens generation for generation.
Yeah.
Generation. So the main thing again is know your shadow as best you can, essentially, so that you could be honest with yourself. Whereas if you have this ideas about yourself, you're supposed to be a certain kind of mother, right? Like the helicopter parent that's like running their kid around everywhere. That's again, running away from how you really feel, right? And not having to be super, not like catch when another mother is making you feel bad because they're doing something to act like a super mom, right? So then you're trying to compete with that person. You don't even know. At the end of the day, the only thing that's happened is you hate your kid now because you just did something you didn't want to do. So this is the type of stuff that if you could start to develop an awareness of it, it's not like you're going to be foolproof when motherhood comes or fatherhood comes, but you're going to be armed with certain tools that prior generations did not have any awareness of.
Brilliant. And Lenka and I, we realized this a while ago. And at that point, we made a promise to ourselves and each other, we as a married couple, to become one, to constantly give each other feedback. Create that awareness in each other by being each other's mirror. Of course, being very careful and thoughtful about how the feedback is delivered, because we don't want plates flying through the kitchen. So what are some concrete practices that you can recommend any other married couple that is now listening and says, we want to walk the same path?
Well, I'm really big fan of plate throwing. No. So much of this is an internal journey. Again, like you said, being mirrors, you're going to do that whether you want to or not, right? Because you're constantly going to be feeling different things. It's just a function of whether you're aware of what's triggering what. There's a great book by Shel Silverstein. It's a children's book called The Missing Piece Meets the Big O. It's a 5-minute read, and it's probably the best relationship book I could suggest to anyone. But it's basically the concept of the book is you have like this little piece of a pie, like a pie share, looking another piece to make it whole, right? And so the whole idea is that you have to, instead of being one together, right, you need to each be one, right? And then you can cohabitate together and develop. I say the biggest thing that hijacks couples is this idea of romanticism, what we call romantic love. We've been conditioned with it since birth from every movie we've ever seen, right? And so we have a lot of ideas to what relationship is, and we don't see how that conflicts with reality. And so there's a distinction that a Jungian writer, Robert Johnson, makes in a wonderful book that I would also recommend for anyone in a relationship called We, just W-E. And it makes a distinction between romantic love, which is fairy tale movies like Hollywood, and human love. And human love is really just relating to another person. That's another like totally flawed person that has all sorts of parts in them that they're unconscious to. So when you're getting in a relationship, you're not just two people. You're at one level, you could say each of you and your shadows. At another level, it's each of you and 50 other parts, right? That some you know of and most you don't. Mm-hmm. And so you could see how challenging it is, right? It's amazing. The more you get to know this stuff and what's happening in the unconscious, the more it's amazing that any two people can talk and communicate at all, honestly. But so the more you start, you can make that distinction between human love versus romantic love. And even though it's sad for that romantic part, that's wanting, like, for example, Lenka, you're wanting like Alexander to be this knight in shining armor. And, you know, Alexander, you're wanting this princess, and all of those things keep, which again are archetypes, right? They're not human, right? And so that human love is just relating of like two awkward people. And that's all we are. It's like, we're all very awkward. Like our personas are very like refined and great, but like we as individuals are like goofy and weird and kind of just programmed by all sorts of silliness that we don't need, but it's just running in our psyche. Because when we watch something for our brain, it's actually happening. So like, you know, if you put someone and they're watching a movie while they're in an MRI, the brain can't differentiate, it's happening. And so that happened over and over and over and over again, right? And that's how most of these archetypes are operating in us to begin with. So getting, like, separating that out, seeing that, catching when those parts are doing that. And when you need that, get your fix, watch a movie, whatever. And then come back to reality, which is, again, it's like, it's kind of goofy, awkward. It's boring. It's slow, right? There's not a lot happening. That's why we're constantly needing to go do things that stimulate ourselves, because, like, actual reality is really not much going on. You know, you watch a movie, it's like, it's change of scene, very fast paced. You got nice score in the background, you got music, so you got the vibration and energy of that, right? You wonder why people have trouble meditating. This is it, right? We've been living in this, like, other sort of simulation dimension of reality that makes reality, like, actually really kind of dull.
You said one really interesting part that related to energy. And you said previously that you had to start feeling your body because you were too much in your head. Could you maybe briefly describe the process, what you had to do in order to get from your head into your body?
Yeah. There's two main ways that I'm aware of, two main sort of bodies of practice that kind of are helpful in that body-mind integration. There's yoga and Qigong. Personally, I was more drawn to Qigong for numerous reasons. But both of those are sort of general paths that are known for body-mind integration. And in Qigong, and, you know, Tai Chi is like an internal art that builds on Qigong, and all the internal arts are kind of built on Qigong. But you're developing, Qigong translates to energy skill. And so you're developing the skill of first becoming aware of the energy in the body and then being able to move the energy in the body. But in order to do that, you have to first open up your body enough to feel that energy. And so you begin, when I say, like, there's too much energy in the head, which is like a Western problem, a modern person problem, anyone that's like just us interacting through computers is all in a mind space. You know, it's like our bodies are just sitting there, right? And so we live such a sedentary lifestyle that we don't realize that, like, from moment to moment, we should be able to feel the blood flow throughout our body, right? Every organ is vibrating at a specific frequency that you could tune into, right? And so when something comes up energetically that's blocking, you begin to start to feel it. Usually what happens is you only feel the last thing, which is like pain, right? And until pain is there, you don't even feel anything. Right, because through all the emotional blockages that happens in childhood, we're mostly numb to a great deal of our body. And so the process was, the main method that I used was called Zhongzhong, which is translates to standing like a tree, where you literally get into the specific posture that puts everything in alignment and you just stand. It's like, it's again boring from that standpoint, but yet internally, as you begin to focus in, it's really not, because it's extraordinary to begin to feel what starts to happen once you're in alignment, and you're like, wow, has it been like that all along? And it's fascinating. And then from there, it starts to become a way of being. Like, you know, when you're sitting, when you're talking, when you're doing anything, there's a part of your awareness. And for some people that are more kinesthetic oriented in general, it's very natural because they just do it. They don't necessarily have a language for it, right? It's just happening, right? Like, just the way a feeling type might be more connected to their emotional flow, but they don't have language for that, right? Because the language is more of a thinking function. So really what we're trying to do to become whole is bring all these parts together. You bring the thinking, you bring the feeling, you bring the sensing function, the kinesthetic part of the body and our intuitive center. You bring them all online. And that's where, like we said, in terms of the CEO of your life can really happen. That's when you really unlock your genius. It's bringing them all, the strong ones, the weak ones, you bring them all online, to use a computer, you know, analogy. You bring them all online together.
That's really cool. You just literally described the two of us. Alexander is more the person, the energy in the head. And I am very kinesthetic. I could feel energy since I was a little kid. But then the whole thinking, it's something that Alexander actually taught me. He was like, okay, this is strategic thinking and this is how you think. And now I love thinking. And the same goes for Alexander. I just explained him that he has two arms and two legs and actually you can feel energy. So it was a brilliant discovery.
That's what you, well, and that's one of the beautiful things about relationship. And that's what brought you guys together. It's like the masculine function is the thinking function. The feeling sensing function is the feminine function. And so together, intuitive also. So like together, you guys are like basically helping build each other's weaknesses up so that you'll develop more internal wholeness and consistency that way. And it's also the source of a lot of conflict, because you could be, Alexander, you could be thinking about something, you're like, look, it's like this. And Lincoln, you could be like, yeah, but that doesn't feel like that. And you're both true. And here's the main thing is, like, you know, you could go into different systems like Sedona method, where they'll say your feelings always lie. It's like, oh, that's a terrible idea. No, it just gives you a different truth. And so it's coming to see these different truths and holding the perspectives together without privileging any, which is the real gift, is when you can reach that point where you start to hold these different perspectives that seem like they're conflicting, but they're just different. And it's okay to let them be different.
And that's why we ask each other for our confidence level. So when we have conflicting opinions, we ask each other, how sure are you? Well, that's maybe a very left brain way of doing it. But it's brought us to some valuable insights.
Okay, I have a question.
How intuitive are you being right now?
That's the thing. So how do I know that nice. I develop my intuition and that I am able to use it? Because I know that most of wrong decisions are purely based on the fact that you did not follow your intuition, or you didn't know you have one, or you didn't really use it in the right situation.
Well, I could say, I'll give several different perspectives. Carl Jung, for example, he said that from his experience, intuition was right only about 50% of the time. So it's like this idea that they always follow your intuition. I think the idea is that if you look at those four functions that we just talked about, thinking, feeling, sensing, intuiting, they all are important. And all of them out of alignment with the others is probably giving you a limited perspective. And so like in 2020 hindsight, you can always look back and say, oh, I should have trusted my intuition, right? And so that gives you reference to that. But then there's probably other times where you're not thinking about, where your intuition wasn't wrong, but you stayed quiet and didn't even think about that it wasn't right. At least that's the idea here. But when it's in your body, and it's like, that's why they say that gut instinct, because your gut connects through the basal ganglia to a very primitive part of your brain, and it doesn't actually go to your prefrontal cortex, which is why you get that feeling, but you can't language it, or you can't explain why, because it literally doesn't connect to that. And that's why it's also faster, because it takes longer to develop the language function. And that's, again, if you look at these different centers, if you just accept the fact that we are most of the time going to be wrong, like the Taoists have, like, something to your point, the Taoists have something that I say all the time now, and it kind of, I hate it, but at the same time, it's just so true. I have to accept it. It's like, as long as, like, you're not fully integrated or like aligned with your original spirit, which is pretty much everyone, every decision you ever make is wrong.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And the older you get, the more, like, in the beginning you could fight it, and then after a while you're like, man, that's so true. Yeah, you're going. It's like, yeah, that makes sense. So that, it, just accepting that, like, it's going to be wrong all the time. And then know why. It's going to be wrong because we're making decisions from all of our, like, our conscious mind, or what they call our mundane conditioning, all the parts that develop through a very chaotic, very disturbing, fragmented world that we've observed. Like, the more you start to see that what you take in and how it influences, the more you'll reflect back on, like, the different things that you've watched and seen, observed, both in real life and on a screen, and wish you didn't take that in. Because even though, think about, like, for example, this comes back to the shadow work too. Anyone that you interacted with, like, in school growing up, like, that you had rubs with that you didn't like for any reason, right? And then, at least in your conscious mind, accept the fact that you are them. Because you absorbed it when your brain was developing, you watched it, and so now that's in you too. And that's one of the things you're running away from. Like, if there was some kid that was bullying you, now you're that bully. Yeah. Right? Like any trauma that took place at any time, you might have been the victim at one point, now you're the perpetrator. And so all of those parts are collecting up, and each one is trying to shout to say which direction to go in to make a decision. Yeah. And that's why it ain't so easy to make the quote unquote right call, you know, because we've got a chorus of parts that are trying to tell us what to do.
Yeah, you made me think of Wyatt McCain, who comes as well from Tony Robbins, and he's coached to Hollywood celebrities. I had the opportunity to be coached by him, and me and Alexander ourselves, we are certified NLP practitioners, so we understand the power of programming and revisiting back your somehow negative experiences in life. And he really helped me to simply look at the same situation with a different meaning, and it changed completely a lot for me. So I wanted to ask you, can you walk us through one case study, someone who you got as a coaching client, and what happened afterwards?
In general, or is there some specific?
No, I would like to more know from where a person can go to where.
The majority of people that I work with they're already doing well by you know, any modern standard. They're already like high achievers. They already have, for the most part, successful businesses. They're always looking to grow it, you know, to scale it further. But the main thing that they tend to be stuck in is the achiever self, right? Which is just always trying to improve. You know, it's like it's always trying to develop itself further. It's always trying to look at like, what could it do better to optimize, right? It's like optimize, up-level, scale, all those like popular terms in that market. That's where all biohacking, everything comes from. And so I would say the main thing, like when I know it's going well, when I know there's like an inner transformation happening, is when that part gets kind of, it could sit down and gets put in its place, where it's not like the person's whole being, where there's more of, and you could see it in like how their employees relate to them, in that like everything's just kind of calm. It's like instead of these huge waves, it's just like, it's like a nice swell, like really calm, like, you know, calm ocean. And the way when problems come up, they're handled, it's not from like, let's create a fire and then put it out. It's more just rational and objective. And when conflicts come up, there's like a different part that comes out of the individual that can deal with it in a very adult way. I think that's really the word. It's like what we're trying to do is be adults. But the truth is, if we're really honest about it, we have no idea what that means. Because we have literally, and I mean literally, no role models for what adulthood is. But yet we all want that, because in the absence of that, we're essentially being adolescent, right? And developmental psychology supports this. Like mature adulthood is reached by less than 2%, which is why I also said to wait as long as you can to have kids, because most parents are kids, bigger kids. And so kids are, like real kids, are absorbing and observing the behavior of bigger kids, right? Thinking that's what it is to be an adult. So I'd say the main thing that happens through the coaching process is there is more of a location of authority internally, so that self-leadership allows them to regulate those sort of parts in them, so that there's more okayness in what they're doing. Their management style changes, there's more of a relaxing into their being, where they don't have to be achieving. Like where their self-worth is not tied to their bank account or how big their business is.
Which all comes back to, who am I really, and how can I express my being? One thing that we find with many entrepreneurs is that they're very much tactical, always looking for the next win. And not often you find entrepreneurs that are truly strategically working towards a vision. And a leader needs a vision, because you can sell people on the vision. You can influence others by describing the vision. So how do I define my vision?
In your business or in your personal life?
For me, they go hand in hand. It is me. So it's always a combination of what I want my personal life to look like and what I want my business to look like. And I believe that if I play it strategically, I can create synergy between the both.
Yes. Yeah. The way I generally conceptualize it, you have your vision, then you have your strategies for actualizing that vision, and then your tactics to execute on that strategy. I'd say for someone that's having trouble figuring out what their vision is, the main thing is to get into a very specific state before you ask that question, which means like not in the part that might be, that's confused, right? Which is also a younger part, not in a part that wants to dominate the world and show those people that were looking down on them before, right? Because that's how you create like all sorts of crazy visions that are not in alignment with yourself, right? Here, it's more of a, what they call in Zen, like a beginner's mind, where you're just open, right? And there's more of like this childlike playfulness that comes up. I've always had an affinity for the children's book, Harold and the Purple Crayon, where, you know, it's like this little kid, Harold takes out a purple crayon and draws an entire adventure and then lives in that adventure, right? And so if you can get into this childlike playful state with an open mind or a blank canvas and say, okay, what do I want to create? Like, what's going to be meaningful to me, right? You guys talked about meaning and purpose. It's like the first starting point is to realize that we're making this up, right? If you think of any grand purpose or meaning still, at some point you're going to have to let that go because it just doesn't exist. It's totally a myth, right? It was, and as millennials, I don't think have a trouble with that. Or older generations, they often tend to have that programming of this like universal meaning. But usually, like for millennials and onward, it's more of like, okay, well, what can I do that's going to bring me alive, right? Or at least alive right now, knowing that that vision might change, right, at some point in the future, so you can keep it fluid. And then only look, I'd say, 3 to 5 years out, right? Because you go much further, and who knows what's going to happen then, right? So what is that going to look like? Can you step into it? Can you, if you feel it right now, and you bring it alive in your mind, and you can hear it and feel it, like, does it light me up a little bit? Is it something I want to move towards? Then it's probably closer to it. And then watch that part that wants to make it perfect, that wants it to be the vision. No, it's like got to be right. You know, you're gonna like, you want it to be the, it's got to be it, and it's gonna etch it in stone. And it's never gonna change. That's the perfectionist part, and that will keep you from doing anything.
I love it. Really, it's really cool. And imagine that I have a vision, just kind of concrete and very exciting. But I know that 3 to 5 years are simply not realistic. I know that such a vision can be achieved in 10 to 20 years. What then?
Then you just accept that patience is required to realize your vision.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So if I have such a clear vision also a long time ahead, it's all right.
Yeah, it feels right to you, and it's what it takes to light you up, and you know it's coming from a place inside of you that's in your center. Again, because a lot of times, I say this because a lot of times if it's real grandiose, it's coming from some other mechanism that is not really what you want. Like most people, like most achievers are chasing something that will make them miserable, and a lot of times they achieve it and then wonder why they're miserable. Because they were climbing up the wrong ladder and they didn't realize what side of the building it was on. So that's why I say, you know, but if you're doing it from your center and it's just something that's just very meaningful to you, then yeah, that's awesome. Go for it.
I heard you mention earlier the importance of awareness in stripping away everything that limits us. Does it mean that there's some kind of ladder of awareness that we can climb? Or is there a different ladder for everybody?
Well, with any kind of skill, you're dealing more with levels of sensitivity than, you know, like if you're referencing like levels of consciousness or something like that. There might be stages that if someone studies, they can say there's different stages you reach in those sensitivities. But ultimately, it's just how much more sensitive you become to your internal processes, what's guiding your decisions, what's guiding your behavior, what's guiding your thoughts and feelings, right? Are you hearing the inner voices that are causing you to make the decisions that you're making and think the way you're thinking.
We have a good idea of the basic foundation of what we need to do to be CEO of our own life. We know which questions to ask ourselves to have a vision, and we're going to feel drawn to that vision. So we're going to start moving. But of course, we're still in our old body, like full with all those limitations. So how can we prepare our future selves for limiting ourselves? So which kind of routines can we implement that open us up for moving forward to that vision?
So those routines are going to change depending on what stage you're at, right? Like a lot of people talk about, like, you hear so much in the personal development world about morning routines. And the emotional subtext is like, you're not cool unless you have a routine, and look at my routine. And, you know, it's like, it's a very funny game to watch. I'm giving this as a caveat to your question, Alexander, because there's benefit to when you have no like supportive habits. Routines are very useful in establishing some, but routines also become a very big crutch and limitation if they're not used in check, like where you're not watching your behavior with them. Because for most achievers, routines become a to-do list, and there's a feeling of accomplishment. I checked it off, like I meditated, good for me, you know, and like I meditate every morning for 10 minutes, you know. So that's something to watch out for. But that said, there are some basic things that we don't necessarily know to do, and you know, like the default behavior isn't necessarily empowering. So we can go into those. For example, looking at your phone first thing when you wake up, right? Most people check their phone an average of 150 times a day. But as soon as you check email or social media, you're activating your sympathetic nervous system. So you're already getting in kind of a reactive mode. And so if you're going to develop any kind of morning routine, I always advise people not to touch the phone until after that. And so one great habit is go as long as you can in the morning without touching technology. So that's one rule. One routine. Another would be on the physical level is hydrating first thing in the morning, because we tend to be dehydrated from sleep. Another routine would be, I think the most, just to, on the common theme of our dialogue of self-leadership, is taking time to reflect back. And what that means is being able to pause, like practice pausing, right? Like we talk a lot about, you hear a lot about meditation and the value of meditation. But the reality is when you're like hyper neurotic and like just in that, again, that achiever part, which is hyper neurotic, meditation is kind of sadistic, because you're asking that part that's like going at like 110% to stop and sit still and stop thinking. Like you might as well like hit it in the head with a hammer. Like honestly, it's cruel. So instead, like maybe walk, right? And then pay attention to your pace of walking. And then just by putting your awareness on your walking, you might slow down your pace, right? And then you might notice how you're breathing as you're walking. Or even if you're working, and even you don't want to pause, right? Can you place part of your awareness on your breath, right? Can you check in with your posture, right? So there's a lot of things that we can do in the momentum that we have and in the pace that we're doing, that by virtue of doing those things, we'll start to develop other routines and habits that are more helpful. For years, I had like 3-hour morning routines. So I'm saying, I've done all the wrong things to know what they do. So if I'm making fun of them, it's just because I've been there on all of them, and I still have all of those tendencies. It's just over time, you begin to catch what's driving them. And it's never what you think it is. And it's always something that's slightly embarrassing. but ultimately, what we're trying to do is just get closer to ourselves right? And so to feel okay. And so the more you can kind of pause and slow down, the more perspective you're going to be able to have, right? Another thing is to, whenever possible, work in time blocks where you're, you know, we're not machines. So the idea of going all day, like I remember in my 20s, like I always had, it was like a badge of courage to work really long hours, right? And it didn't occur to me that that was actually foolish, but that was the cultural conditioning, right? As an entrepreneur, it's important to pull all-nighters from time to time and work at least 15-hour days. Whereas the reality is that the top performers in any field work in 90-minute blocks at most. You know, they train in 90-minute blocks, and then they rest and recover. And in you start to challenge your beliefs that like working more is going to get greater results, and you start to appreciate those pauses and that restoration and rejuvenation time and allow it to happen. Whereas at first, we don't realize that we don't stop because we literally can't. There's a voice in us telling us that we're just not worth it, and you got to prove yourself, right? And that voice will keep running and running and running, and until you start to hear it, it doesn't feel good. But once you get to the core of it, then you could stop. And you can see that you work when you need to work, and then when you don't, you can stop. I think that's probably one of the best routines you can have.
Yeah, it's the recovery moments.
Absolutely.
And what we find is there's always a balance between action and recovery, right? They balance out. You need to get into action to actually manipulate your environment and create things, and you need to recover. So what we notice is that it's not the action moments, but it's the recovery moments where we have these flashes of insight, these brilliant new, I call them the genius ideas.
Yes.
Suddenly a new connection that happens that we can't wait to implement when we get back into action.
Yes, that's the creative process. About a decade ago, I wrote a book called Creativity Revealed. Where I kind of go through the creative process through like four archetypes that represent this creative process. The first stage is they usually call preparation, which is like the student, right? Where you're kind of working. That's like that achiever mode. You got to go. You're just like nonstop, constantly absorbing more information and figuring out what to do. It's very action oriented. But if you read the tales of like creative geniuses, they all go through periods of reverie where they just pause, and I call that the wanderer, right? That's the kind of incubation period where they, you know, it's like you go for a walk or you're in the shower. That's those aha, and that leads to the next stage, which is that aha moment, right? Or what I call the light. That light of illumination, right, that comes in, and you're just like, oh, why didn't I think of that? Like, if we just do this, this will be it. But that, for that to come, you have to take a step back, right? If you just stay in that student mode or in that achiever mode, those moments don't come. And then there's the scientist in the verification mode. It's like, all right, let's test that. Does that actually work out? And then if it does, then, you know, that's great. And if you could keep doing that cycle over and over and over again, there's no end to the creativity that you can apply to your work.
I see here Kolb's learning cycle as well. So you have a theory about how things work. You design an experiment. You go through the experience. And you reflect on it. And you redesign your theory.
There you go. Yeah, and if you do that, like again, it's that reflection part. That's the routine, is to develop that. Just because most people, again, when you're, especially working online, when you're in front of a computer, it's like we don't realize how that's affecting our brain. And so we can get consumed by what we're doing and not take that time to reflect back. So that's kind of, I find, a useful skill for people.
How can I start with self-coaching, or what are the basics of your method?
Well, I'd say there's certain foundational things that you would kind of maybe want to be taught in school but aren't, you know, like in our basic education. Like, for example, we talked about vision. You know, I think everyone should take the time to kind of define what their future self is like. One of the reasons this studies show most people are in debt is because they don't value their future self, So their animal self, or their personal, like their present self, is driven by basic animal needs, and so seeking pleasure in the moment, right? But when you have a future self, there's something that can kind of pull you forward that can help you mitigate like the self-control issues that people have, or impulse control that keeps people in financial health and emotional areas from kind of like putting things off to get towards that goal in the future. So that's, I think, a very important component, is having that vision. Another one is values. To know what you stand for, to what's really important to you. Again, prior generations, like your value, what your values were told to you, right, by your church or your family. Whereas now, you get to decide what you stand for, right? And there's a lot to choose from. You know, on my site, I have a list of, I don't know, over 300 values, and there's plenty more. So going through a process of discovery to find your values, I think, is very important. And then also knowing about your personality, right? Like, what are like the core aspects of your sort of personality DNA? Not the persona that we're pretending to be, but the actual core of our personality. And a lot of people use Myers-Briggs. I personally find Enneagram to be a much more functional and useful personality system, mainly because it's not telling you what you are, it's telling you what you're not, and showing you what the levels of development of your personality type are. So I think that's very valuable. Also knowing your strengths, right? There's a great positive psychology founder, Martin Seligman, has a great survey on determining what your core strengths are. And the research shows the more time you spend in developing those strengths and doing things that are in alignment with your strengths, the more happiness you have in the present and potentially in the future. And then knowing also like what you're passionate about, like what kind of like lights you up, the things that you enjoy, right? Because usually it's, you know, we kind of have this, especially millennials have this idea that the things that you do personally, like in your business, have to be things that you're passionate about, right? Which is some level of truth to it. You don't want to do too many things that you don't like, but the reality is there are certain aspects of just running a business that are not necessarily going to be things that you're passionate about. But you should have outside things that you like to do so that your work isn't just driven by your business and what you're doing to achieve, right? So just things that are just more for your own enjoyment of life. So getting clear on that. I think those are some of the main things. There's others, but you know, just basically foundational things about yourself that you can all keep on one sheet, like I call it like your personal snapshot, just to check in with, right? You know, like your goals is another one. Like, what are your professional and personal goals? So that anytime you, that part of us that hijacks us, where we feel confused and don't know what to do next, or we're overwhelmed, you have a reference point to go back to and say, okay, wait, what do I need to be doing? All right, there, this is what's important.
Like a compass.
Yeah, like a compass.
How do I recognize in the moment that I'm sabotaging myself?
Well, usually, yeah, you see, that was good. You put in the moment, right? Because usually we recognize the sabotage far afterwards. after the fact, that's that beauty of 2020 hindsight. You know, the truth is the only way to catch the sabotage in the moment, I don't know which context you had in mind, but the only way is to develop enough self-awareness, like from your center, where you're constantly monitoring. So there's like, you've developed what's called the observer self. Like, for example, we're having this conversation, and so, you know, like there's a speaker, and then there's two listeners here, right? But ultimately, you can step outside, right, to the observer self, who's watching all of this taking place, who's not necessarily identifying with the speaker or the listeners. Right. And so from that observer self, you could kind of catch more easily as things are happening. There's more of like a warning beacon, like, hey, what are you doing here? Right. But the challenge with that, and the reason why this takes a bit of kind of doing to get to that point, is the way the Taoists describe it is you have a house, which is like your ego, your mind. And in this house is like a lot of rowdy guests, and there's no host, and you need the host to bring order to the guests, basically. And so that the guests are all these parts or archetypes in our psyche, and then the host is our original spirit or that observer self that's neutral, compassionate, right? And just like curious, like it's not positive or negative, right? It's not like a higher this or a lower that. It's just right in the center. And so it can regulate all these other rowdy parts that are all fighting for attention. So the self-sabotage is from one of these parts in our psyche that's constantly wanting control, right? Or you can use the example of a school bus, right? There's no like adult bus driver. There's just all these kids saying, no, I want to drive. No, I want to drive. I want to drive. And as long as one of those kids are driving the bus, there's mayhem. And so there's going to be some form of sabotage.
Well, that's great news.
So then the question becomes is how do you find that bus driver? Like, where do you get that host, right? And the host, they explain, is like, was there at the very beginning. And then because of all the stuff that happens early in childhood, it kind of checks out. So it's still there floating around somewhere. It's just, how do you bring it back? And that's where the slower you go, this is kind of, again, this goes against the whole achieving personal development thing of got to go 110% and drive forward. Here, it's more of, can you pause long enough to catch up with what's happening, right? It is a line in the Tao Te Ching. It's like, when you move fast, it shows up on your face, right? So it's like, can you move slow enough where you see? And it doesn't mean, again, go meditate in a cave. It's not like that at all. It's, can you become present in what you're doing through the course of your day? And when you lose presence, catch it faster and faster, and then move on. See, meditation was designed to set a context for the rest of the day. What we tend to do with it is we dichotomize, we create a split, like a meditator self, and then the rest of the time, right? It's like, okay, I meditated, let's go back to the rest of the day, right? Let's get going. So that's actually more harmful than good. I wish there was more kind of instruction on that, because what that does, again, is it creates a spiritual ego that becomes inflated, that feels like proud of itself that it meditates, but yet continues with its same poor behavior the rest of the time and becomes more unconscious to that behavior. Whereas the idea is that if you meditate, then watch what happens right after you meditate. Right? It's like, can you still continue in that same state? And then when you get out of it, can you again bring yourself right back? Like, maybe even as we're talking right now, can you bring yourself right back? And then it's a constant just coming back to the center. And then, okay, I need to respond to this email. Okay, coming back. All right, I was just thinking about something in lust. Where was I? Okay, coming back. There's no like magic trick to it. It's like a cultivation of presence, of coming back to where you're at right now.
Wow, it's pretty clear to me by now, Scott, that you have knowledge, wisdom, well, you're the sage, that every other human being would benefit from greatly. To which extent do you feel a responsibility to spread that knowledge?
Well, first, CEO Sage is a brand. I'm not a sage, and I'm just like, one thing you start to see as you do this work is like, we're all the same, honestly. We're really, and really, really all the same. And the quicker we get to that and we stop like projecting up or projecting down, like it's really hard to look straight ahead, but we are literally all in the soup together, as Jung would say. And so there's no difference. I might have more knowledge, like you said, that might be because of the reading or whatever, so I have more language to it. But I am in the same struggle, losing my center all the time also. Just to clarify, because again, otherwise you think like I'm here and you're, it's like we are literally, it's the same. In terms of the sharing responsibility, I mean, it's kind of like, again, we talked about it's important to know your strengths and play to your strengths. This is natural for me. Like, you know, I could talk about this all day. So it's like, it comes, it's effortless, right? And so that's the idea, is kind of go where it's natural and where it's effortless. Now, you can't spend all your time there because you also have to mind your weaknesses, right? But the more time you spend in those things that are your strengths, the more just beingness there is, the more flow, right? After this, then something else happens in life, and then you're out of that flow, right? And then it's a function of coming back to it. But I'm not under any illusion, first of all, that this knowledge will is important in the sense that like I have to share it. I think that would be coming again from an inflation. Like I'm somebody and I have this knowledge. No, this knowledge is out there. It's been out there for a long time. It gets lost for generations and found. It's out there now. It's not like I came up with any of this stuff, you know. And so it's none of it's new. And there are people that are like intuitive and already connected, where they're like, they might hear this and be like, why do you make this all so complicated? Because it's like just how they are, right? So it's just, I think we do what we do by virtue of what we are and the conditions of, in our environment. So if I stopped tomorrow because something else caught my attention before, I would not feel a responsibility to the greater good. I know that goes against a lot of what we, you know, what we hear, but I'm just being honest.
Yeah. You accept who you are, and all you're trying to do is express yourself.
Yeah, pretty much. And I think it is really cool stuff. And I think it's encouraging to see that other people, like you guys, are into it as well. Like, so it's in that way, like you could be in your own bubble, but then when you start putting it out there and start to see there's like a high level reciprocity where there's people coming to you and saying, oh, I thought I was crazy. It's really great to know that there's someone else like that's kind of having these experiences or thinking like this. A lot of people just want the language, right? They don't have the language for it. So they can kind of get a sense of it, but they don't really understand what's happening. And so having the language is like a relief for them, right? So in that way, it's like, oh, great. So then it was useful. And we do seem to have like a part of us that likes to contribute. And so, you know.
Sometimes difficult for people or challenging to understand the power of coaching, because there is still somehow perception among few of people is that there is some kind of therapy or you need help. While it is so valuable to have another perspective to exactly the same thing, because you never see the same. So having this conversation with you is amazing. It's like I'm really listening to everything you say, every word that you choose, and I'm learning so much because it gives me a different perspective, and that helps as well our clients and our audience to have completely different look at the same thing. In a few sentences, why do you think that coaching is powerful, and how do you explain it to your audience?
Well, I'll give a very quick one sentence answer first, and I'll elaborate. But you'll get it from this one sentence: when you're in the bottle, you can't read the label. And we're all in our own bottle. And so really the primary role from my perspective of the coach is to sort of shine the light, right? That light of consciousness on the individual so they could see where they're at, they could see what they're doing, right? And in a way of being from neutrality, right? Because a lot of times things were pointed out to us, but it was in a very aggressive or bullying or nasty way that made us just the ego shut down to hearing it. Whereas when you hear it in neutrality and there's like a part going, oh yeah, 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 I know I do that. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh God, I don't want to do that, right? And then there might be like guilt or something that's internal, but they're not being shamed for it, right? It's like most of us, like the way we were taught was through shame, and it all the research shows and life experience shows too, it just doesn't work. So the role of the coach, like, you know, if you look at the role of coach versus therapy, like therapy is really, it's designed to kind of help. It's an illness-based model. And if you look at the research, it's a very ineffective model. CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, is a little bit better, but because you're learning essentially like an NLP technique. For the most part, it's not very effective. Coaching is kind of like, the reason why we need coaching is like what we talked about before. Almost everyone is at a level of sort of maturity that's below where they're supposed to be for their age. And that's a sad reality. There's a lot of conditioning of why that's there, that why it is that way. But once we accept that, it's like that coach can play that role of like the guide to help the individual kind of move ahead to where they probably would naturally be on their own, right? This is just more on the personal level. On the business level, you know, a coach might have just a lot of ways, like a lot of experience in business, and can look at your business and say, oh, you just need to do this, this, and this, and your business is going to grow, right? That's different. But also from a business level, like working with entrepreneurs, everyone is their own worst enemy, right? We're all hijacking ourselves. It's just a function of, do we know how, and do we know how to get out of our own way? So that the role of the coach is in that way. It's like, what do you look at the root of the term? It's coche, C-O-C-H-E, from Middle English, which was like a carriage or coach. So we still use that in airlines, right? Traveling coach. And so the coach or carriage help you get from one place to the next. So what do we talk about? Like knowing where you're at right now, right? Not the lies we tell ourselves or the self-deception, but really where we're at right now. And what's our vision? Where do we want to go? And then the individual has to get there, right? But the coach can just help guide and not make decisions for them, but just kind of point things out along the way. And if you look at any great adventure story, there's always like a Yoda, a Gandalf, a Dumbledore, a Morpheus. You know, there's always some character that's there to help guide the hero on their adventure.
So the decision whether or not to work with a coach is like the decision whether to walk to your holiday destination or take the bus.
There you go. Yeah. And walk through a lot of potholes and, you know, things like that. Yeah. I mean, again, it's like I could see a world where it wouldn't be an important function, but I also don't think we live in that world now. But some people, again, if it's an authority thing too, because if you could put enough authority in yourself and you have enough internal resources, you know, then it's not necessarily necessary. But I would say, just from experience, that it's usually a beneficial additive. Like, it's in a lot of ways, especially a business coach, it's a luxury, you know, because it's not like someone who's just starting out can necessarily have one. But it's definitely something that can help move things along at an accelerated pace.
Are you able to serve any person, or are there specific types of people, like only business people or specific personality types, that suit you best?
I wouldn't say there's different personality types. I've worked with probably the full range on the Enneagram or Myers-Briggs. It's more of a chemistry thing, you know. There's just certain kind of, as you guys know, it's just some kind of alignment. When it's right, it just like it's right, and you know it right away, or you can tell within a few months. So, you know, I think it's more of like what's the opportunity, both, you know, in the person's business, and then do you guys, you know, resonate with each other? Is there just like a certain level of kind of that chemistry is kind of hard to qualify, right? It's like it's that's, I guess, why we use that term, but it's just some kind of alignment that makes it work. You know?
I get it. And I think your energy is absolutely projected into your posts, into your articles, into your programs. So where could all of the listeners, where they could find you?
The only place, I guess, is scottjeffrey.com. It's J-E-F-F-R-E-Y. I don't actually do any social media, but if you go there, you could pretty much subscribe on any page. And there's a guides page that has in-depth tutorials on how to find your core values and establish your vision, a lot of things that we talked about today. So it's all right there.
Before we close off, Scott, is there any last thing you want our audience to remember from this interview?
Yes. You're okay exactly how you are.
Thank you.
There's so much of like the personal development, self-help, the whole industry, the $10 billion industry, is all based on this idea that there's something inherently wrong with you that has to be fixed. And like that, you know, drove me crazy for over a decade, you know, being immersed in that field. And if I would have just had someone tell me that, and like, I'm not BSing, like I'm being totally honest, like there's nothing, like whatever is wrong with you is wrong with everybody else. It's also wrong with the person who's giving you the information that's telling you on how to fix yourself. So if you just all kind of accept that there's nothing inherently wrong, and whatever is wrong with you is wrong with everyone, it's the same with everyone else, then there's no like feeling of isolation and no need to fix anything. And then you decide you might want to make your conditions better or develop a certain skill. Cool. But you'll do it from an energy of like curiosity and like just an honest desire to kind of develop in an area, instead of, oh my God, I got to learn this because if I don't do this, then I'm going to not be good enough or someone's not going to like me.
Wow. I love how Scott can make complex theories simple. I will definitely listen back to this interview once more and take notes on all the great resources and tips that he mentioned. And I guess it's time for us to start experiencing Qigong.
Yeah.
So we'll definitely be looking for a Qigong teacher in the area and experiment with this wonderful practice.
To receive Scott's super insightful guides, newsletters and blogs, subscribe on scottjeffrey.com/join. You'll even get a free ebook on self-actualization with that as well. If you like what Scott has to say, make sure you check out his website, scottjeffrey.com, because it's packed with value, resources, and most of his guides and other tools are totally free.
That's right. And we promised a special offer for all of our listeners who want the world to know about their brand. Our marketing wizards, Black Paw Marketing, prepared a special offer for you to increase your influence on Facebook. Don't try to figure it all out by yourself and give yourself the gift of working with experts. Click on the link below in the show notes to get in touch with Black Paw and apply for their special offer to get 1 week of your like campaign completely for free when you enroll with them. And I have a question. What was your number one insight of our interview with Scott? Please leave a comment right now, because we love to hear your feedback.
And next week, we will be back with another exciting guest. Make sure you don't miss any episode and subscribe now on earnmoreworkless.com/podcast to receive a notification about each new episode. Now, thank you for listening. Now go out, make an impact, and have fun.